So I don't know if y'all heard, but Russ Fresh got a little present the other morning. Woke
Oh
up to
boy.
a real
Yeah.
surprise.
I thought he explicitly said he didn't want to talk about it.
No, I
I
wanted him to
gross
talk
out.
about it because
I want to talk about
he
it.
shared a photo of it with me, and now we're going to talk about it on the
Oh, I
podcast.
see. Okay. Yeah.
So, but it's not, this isn't for the podcast. This is like stuff like just that happened to be recorded and it's never used. It just Jelani happens to find like a little clip of us chatting before the show
Yeah.
every single week.
This isn't the show, Russ. So talk about your gross bug bite.
Oh, cool. Okay. So I'm not great with bugs, but I do really like hiking. And my wife and I went camping over the weekend. And moment one was that we woke up one morning and there was a spider the size of a half dollar by our heads. Not ideal, but that's
Not great.
fine. But the rest of the trip went great. And it was really lovely. And then yesterday, I woke up and I was, stretching. And it'd been 2 days since we went hiking or whatever. And I felt on my back, the small of my back. And I was like, oh, weird. Is there like a skin tag there or something? And I'm like, well, should I just pull it? And then I looked in the mirror and there was a fellow there just
Little
hanging
friend.
on, a little tick friend. And I had a fucking meltdown.
But you got it out, you dealt with it.
Well, I didn't deal with it. My wife dealt with it after I had like a little child's like tantrum because I had never experienced anything like that.
What was her reaction?
Well, she, there are moments, we all, you balance your partner out, right? So there are moments when I'm having a meltdown and she comforts me and vice versa. This was certainly the former of those situations, and she was very brave and got some tweezers and pulled it out properly. I've never had like a bug living in me that I know of, It's possible
Think
it's
about
happened.
that, though. Think about how that bug's life has been changed ever since the day he bit a radioactive fresh tick. He has become fresh tick, fresh tick,
Oh my
fresh
God.
tick. All his friends think that he's a dick, can't see colors, loves to eat egg
Oh,
sandwiches, does bad voices. This is a disaster. Look out. Here comes the fresh tick.
Good summary of me as a human.
That's basically a summary of Russ as a human being. I can do it. Let me do a nice version and Jelani can cross code.
Yeah, what do you have a kind, a sweet
Always
version?
supports my woodworking efforts. Is a good conversationalist. Look out. Here comes the fresh tick. He's a great listener and not so hot of a talker. Do a podcast with him and it's a mixed bag. Fresh tick. Fresh tick. Look out.
The man already got a bug living inside him, and then you just drag him through the mud.
What's amazing is that Russ's camera is always so dark that we can't make out the details of his face, but he just took off his glasses and wiped his eyes. I can't tell if those were laughter tears or the other kind.
Probably one out of each eye, right? A laughter tear out from one side to another. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best games of the week.
My name is Christopher Plant, and I know the best games of the week.
My name is Russ Frostick, and I know the best games of the week.
Oh my gosh, welcome to the besties. You've made it here again to discuss the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. It's a game of the year show that goes all year long, and usually we discuss one hot title that everyone is chatting about. But this week we're doing something a little different. We are looking at a bevy of a beautiful bounty of, let me try again, a lot of luscious Ludos.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's cool.
A gaggle of great games. There it is, that have come out recently. And we're just going to hop into it because there's so much to talk about.
And I do want to mention these are games that like are not like triple A, not that there are triple A titles coming out right now, but these are generally speaking smaller titles.
Hey man, there's there's fucking Destroy All Humans, remake.
Yeah.
You know what? Real quick, can we just talk about, before we get into the game, the bulk of these games, very quick hits, things you tried and maybe, you know, you didn't get to spend a lot of time with. I wanted to mention very quickly a cool VR game that I played called In Death Unchained.
Mm. Whoa.
Yeah, I know. It's not a good title, but it's an archery sort of like roguelike where you're seeing how far you can make it into a castle dungeon type thing. And it's good. It's archery. So like VR is already pretty good at it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of cool, they've used it in a lot of cool ways. One is the way you get around is teleport arrows.
Cool.
So you pull and you shoot and you teleport to wherever you just hit with an arrow, which actually gives you one, a lot of control, two, constant practice of using the bow and arrow, like more than you would just shooting enemies, which is very cool. They have a shield that you can pop up instantly, sort of like
Space Pirate Trainer,
right? The shield that you can pop up instantly, so you're like firing arrows, you see one coming at you, you instantly can pop up a shield, which is very good. The other hand, the same button as the shield, is a dodge, and the way they do this is very cool. You have what are called teleport shards, and you push the button and throw a teleport shard, and you teleport over just a couple feet.
Mm.
So like it, the flow of it is great because it, like, to dodge, you flick your wrist,
oh yeah,
and you're like, you're over here and you're shooting again. All that stuff is very cool. Anything else really quick?
Yeah, Soda Dungeon 2, we mentioned it, but I don't think we just thought it would be a good, like, at-length conversation topic, but it's a good Soda Dungeon game. It's kind of clicker-like in DNA, but without the clicking, it's just sort of like a very, very, very minimalistic RPG where you send little heroes into a dungeon to earn money to upgrade this bar where you can unlock sodas that attract new heroes and get upgrades for your town to get new armor, to get your heroes deeper and deeper into these dungeons. Soda Dungeon 2 incorporates like a prestige mechanic, essentially, where after finishing the first 100 floors of the dungeon, you jump to an alternate timeline where you start over completely. And then you go into a dungeon with 200 floors, and then you do it again to a dungeon with 300 floors. I think I got to like the seventh like dimension of that. And there's like, it's a game with like a ton of upgrades and progression hooks, but I feel like you hit a wall like pretty quickly. It's not like, I don't know.
I mean, not that quick. You hit the seventh dimension.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I did play it for a while, and like I for sure got my money's worth, and I enjoy those games, but
it's also free. So you definitely got your money's worth.
Well, I mean, I bought the like $2.99 no ads upgrade. There's also an upgrade for like $2 that doubles the speed of combat. Which, oh, like, wow. You buy that, it's hard to feel good about buying that, but also like I'm a busy man. So I think it's a good game. I enjoy my time with it, but it is not the iOS game I've spent the most time playing. Sneak preview.
Very quick, two more. CrossCode is out on Switch. That is a very interesting RPG that's sort of styled like an MMO. I just want to say, Russ can echo this. I've been playing it on the Switch, which is a great platform for it, except for the fact, don't buy it right now.
Yeah.
It runs, it is embarrassing. Like,
it's
the
not great.
The lag on menus is like, mm-hmm. I mean, literally 3 seconds to get from one menu option to another. It is absolutely unforgivable. Wait until it's patched.
The devs have said that there is a patch coming. I don't know if the patch is actually
going
to fix.
I think it's going through. I think it's like going through cert. I think,
but we don't
like
know for sure
weeks.
Is going to fix it. So just keep an eye and we'll talk about it if it fixes it.
And last one, Creek. Did you guys
check
that?
Amarita? What is the...
Amanita.
It looked like Oddworld or like Flashback. Like,
no, I mean, it's one of those like pretty Machinery. Did they do Machinery?
Yeah, Machinery.
Yeah, it's Machinery. It looks great. It's like a little bit kind of like, I don't know, gothic, if you want to say that. But it's a puzzle platformer. Kind of reminds me of like, what did you say? You guys had a good ones. Like Oddworld is a good, or Flashback, or that, things like that. You're basically an unarmed dude trying to make his way through a haunted house by like using traps and levers and switches and stuff to get around ghosts in like a puzzly type way, not so much an arcadey type way. But it's cool. It's very, if that's your bag, it's very
very, very quick one from me. Panzer Paladin, which is like Mega Man crossed with Master Blaster.
Whoa.
And it rules. It is by Tribute Games, who have made a bunch of things. They've been like pseudo hits. Mercenary King, Splint Hook, Wizorb.
Oh, yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah. And this is, it is, you are a giant mech who goes into these different worlds to fight famous deities or mythological gods throughout time. And you will find these swords that have special powers, or you can choose to break them down and then get special power-ups. So there's like all these little risk-reward systems throughout the game. And it is, it's just one of those games that keeps layering on ideas, but they're all good ideas. Which makes it kind of boring to talk about because it's a whole bunch of mechanics, but very, 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 very fun to play.
I'm going to check that out. What's it out on?
It is out on Switch and PC, I believe. I need to check to make sure.
I want let me start by talking about my official pick, although we spent like 10 minutes talking about other stuff, so I feel like this we've already started throwing spaghetti at the wall, because it'll be quick. I want to talk about Good Sudoku by Zach Gage.
So much better than the previous one.
Way better than Bad Sudoku.
Why did they start with Bad Sudoku?
I don't know. I realize that like I kind of dig this game the same way that I dig Clubhouse games, in that it is like kind of a game about gaming literacy, specifically Sudoku, which I think is like a subject that I did not know I was interested in. But it is a game that is, that reveals to you like what Sudoku is actually about above the, like, or rather below the surface level, which is all that I thought existed, right? Sudoku is a puzzle where you have a 9x9 grid separated into, you know, these 3x3 chunks, and there are numbers, and you can't have a repeated number in any row, any column, or any house, which is what they call the 3x3 squares. That's Sudoku. I feel like everybody knows what Sudoku is, right? You see it in the paper, you see it in magazines, whatever. And when I solve a Sudoku in like a magazine or a newspaper or whatever, it's literally a question of going through the different cells, which is what they call the individual squares in this grid, and, you know, look at a cell and say like, okay, well, this row doesn't have a 9, this column doesn't have a 9, and this house doesn't have a 9, and it's the only place where that can go, so this is a 9. And then that informs the other cells in that house, that row, that column, and then you just kind of go through it, right? But the thing you are doing is just process of elimination. You're just going through and solving it based on that level of deduction alone. And what I've realized through Good Sudoku is that like that is baby town, little kid level Sudokus, and that, like, all the ones that I've ever done in magazines and newspapers have been accessible like that. There's a lot more going on. There are a lot of advanced strategies for solving Sudoku where the numbers aren't immediately evident like that, where it's not, well, this cell can only have this one number in it, so that is obviously a solution. There are puzzles where you have way, way, way less to go on, and now it's a question of, like, every cell in this puzzle has three possible solutions. I guess I just have to start guessing and then see if everything lines up, but Good Sudoku is all about not doing that. And in fact, it makes the claim that, like, you can solve any Sudoku puzzle without having to guess and see if everything lines up. There is like a tutorial that is very accessible. It teaches you the basics. It teaches you how to use the notes, the note-taking tools that I'll talk about here in just one second, which is like the best thing about Good Sudoku. And then it shows you these like 20 different like advanced tactics. Like, for instance, if there's a row and there's two cells in that row that, you know, the number 3 can only be in one of those two cells, then you know it's not in any of the other cells. It's got to be in one of those two, right? If those two cells are in the same house, you know that the number 2 is not anywhere else in that house, because like, and that's like a beginner level advanced strategy, and it goes so much deeper than that. And figuring out those things has made Sudoku like a completely different thing for me, and has made it very, very fun for me. So one last thing, the best thing it does is how it handles notes, which is to say there's an auto note button that you tap it right when you start, and it shows you, it fills in all the cells with all the possible numbers that could go in those cells, which, like, I told my wife Rachel about that, and she's like, doesn't that just solve the puzzle for you? But it very rarely just like shows you like, okay, well, this one's got to be 3, this one's got to be 9. It just opens the door for you to use these advanced tactics without having to do the like busy work of just like going through and figuring out like what can't be what. And that is like the whole reason they built the game is Zach Gage wanted to get into Sudoku, but like found that part of the process like so fucking annoying and menial. And now this does it for you so that you can focus on like the really, really satisfying deduction work of Sudoku. I think it's brilliant. I think it's incredible.
So I think that's where it succeeds. There's a lot of areas that it succeeds in ways that, like, if you've ever tried to play Sudoku on a phone, for example, it's generally a nightmare. Like, the UI is a nightmare. It's, like, very cramped, and you're trying to, like, force it. But the idea that you're removing the dummy parts, the parts that you would just automatically get to if you just, like, counted.
Yes.
Basically, it removes all of those elements. So all you're left with is the puzzle-solving logic elements that have no, like, robotic... oh, you'll eventually get to this point. It's
exactly.
More the thoughtful parts of Sudoku, which means that because you're getting rid of that first stage, you can get through puzzles much faster and eventually get to puzzles that are much harder and more complicated because they're removing that, like, oh, I'm spending brain power to figure out which one doesn't have a 9 in it.
It's not even brain power, right? Like, that's just literally looking at a row and saying, like, well, this one doesn't have a 3. That's it. That's not really puzzle solving. But that is also the only kind of Sudoku I've ever done before, is that very, very surface level. Yeah. This game has a button that fucking does it for you so that you can get onto, like, the really, really difficult puzzles that it teaches you these strategies that feels so... I spent like 25 minutes doing a pro level puzzle the other day, just like staring at it. And then like you find that one thing you find. That's what's so great about Sudoku is like I found this one like cell and I was like, oh, well, this can't be a 7. And you scratch out the 7 and then just boop, everything just kind of falls into place. It's really cool. It is very, very satisfying. And it has taught me about Sudoku, which is like not something I thought I wanted to learn about.
Some real quick backstory, just because I think it's especially useful with Zach Gage. So Zach was an artist before he was a game designer, and he made some really bizarre stuff, like a game called Lose Lose, which was like, picture like Space Invaders, except for when you shoot one of the alien creatures, that creature is associated with a random file on your computer, deleting it permanently.
Oh, yeah.
until the game destroyed your entire computer. It was great. What's so interesting to me about his career is he is an artist. He sees the world very visually, and it feels like especially this back half of his career so far has been about looking at iOS, seeing that there are these like core games like chess and solitaire and pool and Sudoku, that there's thousands of versions of them on the App Store, but they're all bad or mediocre. And his like MO is like, well, what if I just did that but good and beautiful, or that but slightly more interesting in the case of like Pocket Run Pool. And that is, it's so fascinating to me, one, because it lacks pretension that this artist, you know, shifted his career to like making games accessible and making games for an audience that would usually not come in contact with the indie game mentality. But also that he's shifted from, you know, this original game, which is about like literally destroying your computer, to making things that are super safe and super friendly and super accommodating in genres that usually are like riddled with predatory ads on free App Store games. I think it's like a really, really, really cool career.
Plant, would you like to carry on with another game?
Yeah, I'll carry on, my wayward son. Carrion is a game that I love. It is a game in which you play as an amorphous ball of tentacles inside of a secret laboratory underground. I would compare it to like The Thing, the John Carpenter movie, right? And it's pseudo Metroidvania in that over the course of the game, you become bigger and more powerful. You have abilities that can like bash through harder materials, or you can take on more powerful enemies with super, I don't know, like releasing like 10 spiky tentacles all at once. But what I really love most about it is just how it feels and how it feels to be the monster. It doesn't feel like anything really that I've played in games because you just kind of float almost through the environment.
It feels, you know what it reminds me of? It feels like you're rolling a pool ball on a pool table almost.
Yeah.
It's like very smooth.
Or like, you know, when Mario gets in the cloud in Super yeah. Mario Brothers, it feels like that. You're just kind of moving around gracefully. It's an extremely violent game. I mean, you like rip people open and their guts spill everywhere, but it's so from the point of view of this creature that I don't know if it's funny, bordering on indifferent to all this violence. It doesn't stress on the violence like The Last of Us. It's more like I think I wrote about this somewhere that like you're like a snake in a classroom when the snake gets fed the mice. Like it's like, okay, this is just what I'm gonna do now. I have no soul or morals, and these mice know what the game is, and I'm gonna eat them. And it's just a game where you just go from room to room, casually eating everything, so that you can grow and ultimately fulfill your dreams, which I won't spoil because that's a good turn in the game. It's just a really beautiful little game. The one caution that I'll give people is navigating the world can be a little confusing at first.
Yeah.
And I would encourage you, if you're playing it and you get a little annoyed in the first hour, muscle through. Maybe look for a guide if you have to. I definitely ran into that problem. But once it starts going, it almost feels like they wanted to build a more like open world Metroidvania, and then about one or two levels in they're like, no, that's terrible, we're just gonna make pretty straightforward levels and let you just go ham on scientists for fun.
Yeah, I struggled with that when I would set the game down for a little while and then pick it back up, and I would start looking like, okay, wait, where am I, which way am I going, what am I supposed to do? Which is kind of cool, which is ameliorated somewhat because I just think getting around the world is so fun and it just looks great.
Yeah.
It just looks like you're, you know what it feels like? It feels like navigation in this game feels like you have a cheat on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It feels like you have some sort of like hack or something. It's like, it shouldn't be this fast. It feels like the game was built for like slower creatures, right? Mm-hmm. You almost feel like you're cheating by how fast you're like getting around the world and blowing through. I also struggled a little bit with targeting. With the thumbsticks, targeting the different like when I did have an enemy that I encountered or whatever, I had trouble hitting them sometimes, especially when you start getting like shielded enemies that you have to hit from a certain direction, etc.
What I particularly liked about it, I feel like these games struggle sometimes where they get to this point where it's like, well, we need to make you feel kind of underpowered in a situation, and you certainly run into enemies that have flamethrowers and like mech suits and all sorts of like really heavy duty stuff. And even in those scenarios, I still felt like kind of a badass, which is like pretty tough to do from a game design scaling perspective. But it didn't feel like I was, it was auto winning or anything like that. It just, it constantly made me feel powerful in interesting ways.
Yeah, it goes from fighting ants to fighting a squirrel. Like, I wouldn't want to fight a squirrel, but I'm a pretty good confidence that I could like beat the shit out of a squirrel if it like went after me, right?
Yeah.
I hope I never have to. I love, you know, Chip and Dale.
Of course. I believe they're chipmunks.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. I appreciate that correction. The other thing that I liked about this game is you are already so overpowered, but if you get into the role-playing spirit of like, I am this thing and I'm going to menace the creatures that I am hunting, you can do things like you'll be in a floor above a room full of scientists, and you'll break a little air vent open, and you'll shoot your arm tentacle down to grab one of them. And then you can pull your body back, so they can't see you. It's just your tentacle holding this human now weapon, and you will slam it all across the room, just demolishing everything in sight until it's just a mix of electricity and blood. And it is the only time I've played a game where I was like, oh, wow, this is really what it would feel like to be the monster in a monster movie.
There's another cool effect, little small thing like that, where when you're roaming around the levels, if you pass by a light, you automatically smash the light into your body.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
And it feels...
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a very cool thing. It looks like a horror movie. Like, you see him, like, ripping stuff down and...
I caught myself, with regards to role-playing, more than once, like, going into a room where there's just a switch... I get to flip to like turn off some security system, and there's like a single scientist in there, and I'll just like walk right up to it and flip the switch, and just kind of like shh, You're fine. You get, for whatever reason,
you're cool.
For whatever reason, I've decided you're cool. And it's, I'll be honest, it's because I have full health right now and I don't need your flesh to join my biomass. But remember and tell them, tell your children.
There are so many people, characters in this game, on toilets. Like, clearly that scene in Jurassic Park where the T-Rex eats the dude on the porta potty was very informative for whoever made this game, because it's amazing how many times I was just wrecking people in one room, and in the room next door somebody just meanwhile is just taking like the poop of their life, totally unaware.
And then the poop of their death.
Yes.
Listen, I love video games and I would continue to discuss this one, but there are other ones to discuss and we must move on. We must move on. Come with us. Hop on our shoulders. We'll carry you on. Carry on.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, I want to talk about my video game. No one else has played it, so you're going to have to trust me. I begged them to play it. Did you notice how we all played Carrion? No one played
Well,
my game.
If we Carrion tried. Was something you had to buy tickets for and then you could play it at 9 o'clock p.m.
Wow, Griffin, that sounds like a revolutionary, interesting experience. Let me talk about it. The Under Presents is a VR experience. I know that it is native to Quest for sure. I didn't need a link cable or anything for it. It's probably on other platforms. I think it's on Steam. It's by a developer called Tender Claws, and it is basically a theatrical production. If we start there, a lot of the things that I'll say will make sense. It's a theatrical production. You are basically, your interactions with the world are limited to taking on and off a mask, picking up items. Sometimes you can do a little spell that will grow or shrink items or absorb them into you or let you interact with them. But basically that is it. That's the extent of your interaction with the world. And The Under Presents is a theatrical, the game itself presents theatrical shows. There are tickets, timed tickets that you buy where you pay $15 and you get a ticket that is before a specific time. If you miss it, you lose your ticket, just like any other theatrical production. You show up 5 minutes before, you're teleported into a lobby with, I was with three other people. It seems like it's designed for four people at a time, which is wild to think about. Four people can play this at a time. I don't know if it's instance, but there is a limiting factor, and that's the fact that you do the show with a live actor who is performing their role, and they're the only one you hear talking. Everybody else is anonymous. But they perform their role live with you, interacting with you. The show that is going right now and will run till, I believe, August or September, I think September, is called Tempest. And it's sort of an adaptation of The Tempest, where the different people in the show are given like little roles to play throughout. And there's some very simple interactions that you do to sort of act those out. Like, for instance, in the first scene, I was assigned to be one of the sailors that's coming onto the island, and I was told to like pick up the steering wheel and pretend to steer it.
Are you told that by the actor, like in character?
Yes. The actor in character gives people roles. But he's not, the actor is not like in character of The Tempest. It is very much like, let's pretend The Tempest together.
I am a storm.
exactly, right? It's not that far off. But what's cool about it is it's elevated because you're being teleported to different environments that feel like appropriate to the moment. And there's some special effects. They play different characters throughout. It evolves. Like the thing gets increasingly more intense, I would say. But it is one of the best sort of like multiplayer experiences. The only other interaction you have with the world is you can press a button to snap. And if he asks you to do a role, for example, or ask you to do something, you can nod to show that you understand, or you snap. And people use that to, if something really cool happens, all four of us would independently just start snapping.
Like a beatnik bar.
Yeah, exactly, right? As a form of like applause. Right. And people really bought in because you paid $15 for this hour-long experience. Like, you're going to lean into it. At the end of our show, we were transported back to the lobby, me and the three other people. And like, everyone took time saying goodbye. like there was like bowing and some like snapping and you know, waving or whatever, what limited ways you could before you walk out of the theater and are teleported away from this. It's really, really cool. I would say that it's more at this point about absolutely 100% worth doing. I am more excited about like ways they can evolve this with different shows or whatever, if this is popular enough.
And I believe this is their second or third show, right? I believe they've done other things. I think
I would say that it's sort of limiting right now in the fact that like the shows I think are at 7, 8, and 9 p.m. EST. So and then there's like some earlier shows in the on weekends. There's like matinees on the weekends. So that is kind of a limiting factor if you don't play games at night. You know, it's harder to get into. But I just found it a really exceptional, very cool and weird experience that I would be very happy to do again as soon as they have a different show, or to do the show again and have a different role, because they ask you like, have you played this part before? And you know, they try to give new opportunities to different people.
What excites me about this the most, and I didn't have a chance to play it, but what excites me is the idea of the eventual democratization of this VR theater idea. Like, I am thinking about the power of a like sleep is death style system that isn't just like come here and pay a ticket to go to a show. It is like you know, Gary's Mod style, like set the stage and set the objects in it, and then you run the show. Like, you get to come into these servers where you host your own shows.
Almost like Tabletop Simulator, but for theater.
Kind of like Tabletop Simulator, but in VR, and for theater. Like, I, if that was going on right now, like if those tools were available, that game, whatever you want to call it, like was available right now to like theater companies that have no source of income or whatever, like that seems like incredibly cool and also in some ways like inevitable. And it's neat that this is like, it seems like the first step towards that. Maybe not the first step. I'm sure there's like been interactive stuff like this, especially in VR social games and stuff, but it is really cool to see a game like really just double down focused on VR theater. Yeah. Man, I miss Sleep is Death. What a cool ass game that was.
Okay. You got to tell us about this game, because I love this game.
Yeah, this is a very cool game. So I was trying to remember whether we had actually talked about it. So the game originally came out, the game I'm talking about is called Noita, N-O-I-T-A. I believe it came out about a year ago on Steam as an early access title. And obviously there's been a lot of instances where games come out as early access, but they're effectively done. And it's just like, well, we're just going to polish. But the developers have actually used the last year for like an earnest early access effort, insofar as like every few months there's been a new batch of spells and enemies and areas and just like a ton of upgrades to the system, to the point where they're very close to having a 1.0 release. I'm not sure if they have a date for it, but it's very close. Suffice to say, it is a 2D side-scrolling wizard game, effectively. You are a dude in a robe or a lady in a robe, and you go into this cave with a very basic set of skills and a bomb. And the game utilizes like a very complex series of like fluid dynamics, fire spreading mechanics, all these elements that basically coincide with one another, to the point where, you know, obviously fire sets oil on fire and does more damage for enemies that are like covered in oil. Water will douse fire. The water dousing fire creates steam, which in turn might interact with like electricity, for example. So there's this like very complicated series of mechanics at work here. And making it even more complicated and kind of interesting is that whenever you beat a level, you get this opportunity to basically craft your own spells using the spells that are in your inventory. So maybe you have a spell that fires a simple like magic bolt, and you can combine that with another spell that maybe has lightning attack. So suddenly your basic magic bolt now does lightning damage, as an example. But the level of combinations just gets so wild and complex, to the point where it's actually very easy to break the game. You can basically develop this combination of spells that like make you just cruise through levels much faster than you normally would. But that's kind of okay. It makes every run, I mean, it's a roguelike, it makes every run feel very different. It reminds me a lot of Binding of Isaac in that way, where you can have this overwhelmingly powerful combination of things. It ends up just kind of cruising you through levels. I'm very curious to see what they do for the 1.0, but if you're into like Spelunky or Binding of Isaac, stuff like that, those are the sort of games that like this definitely pulls from.
Also, if you like Secrets, this is a game for you, because this game is loaded, similar to Spelunky, with stuff. The biggest clue I can give anybody is down is not the only direction you can go.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
You're telling me this game's got left?
It's got up.
I really struggled to get into this one. I tried. I think that the bones are there. I just found it, like, trying to understand mechanically pretty tough right now. There's a lot of stuff I just didn't understand while I was playing. I am positive that I could bang my head against it and get to some semblance of understanding with all these different games. I wanted to try to play everybody else's game so I would be a good conversationalist about them. And with all these games to play, I didn't really have time. But I feel like maybe it's something they could fix in later updates, just to make the base. I never saw like the spell creation or anything like that. I just ran around with a canteen and dumped it in poison, which was good too.
I think it's one of those games where I think it's similar to Spelunky in that way, where like the first level is so punishing and takes you like a good hour or two just to like die and die and die until you feel like you're capable with the systems to beat the first level. And that's where all the other mechanics start opening up, is after you're at past that first level. But it is very intimidating for, I think, people that are just jumping in that don't really know what they're doing. You die 15 times within 10 minutes. It could be like a lot to deal with, but it is worth sticking it out.
Especially if that's what you like. If you like opaque games where like discovering what the game even is the reward, I think this game is for you. If you don't like that, I would agree with Justin that you probably want to stay away.
Justin, as a bizarre example, there's people found after like 6 months of playing the game, people found out there are three like random liquids. There's like 16 or 17 different liquids, but there are three that if you combine in a certain way, it is alchemy, and all three liquids just fuse into a giant pile of gold, and no one had any idea for like months and months and months. So that's like great.
That's cool.
There's like all sorts of like really cool secrets in the game. That's Noita.
Okay.
That's all the video games that there are. So
those are all the video games.
So this is the last episode?
I hope people are happy. We got a little bit of feedback from the past 3 weeks, people saying, do you like video games anymore? And it turns out, we do like video games.
I don't know that that's entirely fair. I think there have been things in all the games that we've talked about recently that are like good and enjoyable. I think if anything, like our frustration, well, I don't know, specifically my frustration with Ghost of Tsushima is that I love that developer and there are so many good ass bones there that I wanted it to be better. But us being critical of video games doesn't mean we don't like video games.
No, I can just sense that like if someone's jazzed about a specific game, it can be a little hard to be like, I wouldn't say we were nitpicking, but I get it. Like sometimes they just want to hear people be like enthusiastic about stuff they really, really love. And we were not the most of the last three games. I mean, the last three episodes, I should say.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that on Paper Mario. That one was a real fart balloon. I'll give you all that.
Are you ready for some from listener mail?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that.
So first one from Angry Aria on Twitter. Do you have any games you loved in the past, but you're scared to ever replay because you're sure the nostalgia is better than the reality?
I have one that I'm actually playing right now. Persona 4 Golden came out on PC, and I started to play it on PC, and I was like, man, I wish I could play this portable. And I was like, oh, it's on fucking Vita. I've been replaying that. I'm like pretty deep into it. It is still one of my favorite games of all time, but it has not aged from a sort of social issue perspective. It has not aged, especially at all. Like, there is some rampant sort of homophobia and some trans representation issues in that game that are like I always thought were there, but now playing it in 2020 is like, holy shit. You can't just say like, oh, that character's got balls. It's like, whoa, hey, P4G, let's calm it down. I know Persona 5 has its share of issues and hasn't like... Even the remake, the Royal, they attempted to address some of those, and it, you know, didn't necessarily thread the needle. But yeah, that's one that, like, I don't know. It is very regrettable is the word I would use, because I do adore those games, but I've caught myself yikesing at it pretty hard.
Yeah. In the land of yikes, I think the biggest one looking at my shelf is Urban Chaos Riot Response, which is game that Rocksteady made before the Batman games, where you are a riot cop. And it is, you know what? The good thing is you can watch it on YouTube and just see what a truly, truly bonkers game it is. It is wild knowing also like the inherent copness of Batman that the studio made that game, and then and somebody was like, you know who'd be good for Batman? Those guys. The other, I would also say like a lot of Wii games, I worry that I would not enjoy them as much anymore. But maybe that's just because it's been a little
while. I mean,
we
talked about Super Mario Galaxy a few episodes ago, where like that was a game of the year winner, and it didn't necessarily feel the most.
No. The problem is you were wrong there. It is fantastic, and still holds up. That's totally okay.
But I feel like there's a lot of Wii, GameCube games that and Wii U, like that entire. Well, maybe not Wii U, but that I would actually kind of like to return to, because I feel like I don't know. I played the same 7 Wii games that everybody else played and missed out on a lot of other ones.
Yeah, Justin, how about you?
I feel like maybe House of the Dead Overkill. I have such fond memories of that wonderful grindhouse shooter, and I feel like if I went back, it maybe wouldn't hold up. It's an 11-year-old game at this point, but I have wonderful memories playing it, and I feel like they would not survive the transition.
I feel like those wonderful memories are associated with like me and you like playing through almost that entire game in a weekend, and how fun it is to shoot light guns at a TV. Unless the like
it is fun to shoot light. I miss that. I miss light shooting light guns at a TV.
Oh my god! I just thought my favorite light gun game that I used to pour hundreds of dollars into at the arcade was Police Detective Trainer. Remember that one?
Oh no!
Yes.
I mean, that one was like you like shooting at targets and like doing matching colors and you know shoot these balls as they fly through the air. But like that's the bit. That's
fresh.
That ain't savory.
Tony Hawk Ride for you.
Tony Hawk Ride, of course, my favorite skateboard peripheral. No, the one that jumped to mind weirdly was, and it kind of came up earlier in this episode, Out of This World, which was this side-scrolling game that came out in the mid-90s. I got it at a EB Games and had no idea what it was. I don't even remember why we bought it, my brother and I. But it's this amazing game where you're just a guy that's dropped into an alien planet with no context or no idea of what's going on, and you just sort of have to like figure out the systems of this universe. The moment that jumps to mind is there's a moment where you get dropped into a tank and you have like all the buttons in front of you are all like alien buttons and you have no idea what any of the buttons do. I haven't played it since I was a kid, but like the memories I have of that game are like so strong, the like sense of mystery and like wonder. So I'm like a little bit terrified that it wouldn't necessarily age well, but
I did a whole Eric Chahi replay last year. Great news. That game still is fucking cool.
Awesome?
It's still rad. It takes a while to like get used to the controls, and there's a few like fiddly annoying bits, but like you talk about that sense of mystery and discovery and like danger and like the feeling of powerlessness, like that game is on point.
It's worth noting he just released a new game called Paper Beast, which I haven't played yet, but it's really
it seems like it's a departure, I believe.
Big heads up for anybody who has not played this game or has not played old point-and-click games or just adventure games or anything like Dragon's Lair. Very, very hard to get into and control, and nothing like what you think of when you think of modern video games. So,
no.
Which game?
It's like Prince of Persia. I mean, I feel like a lot of people have played like old Prince of Persia.
Oh, yeah.
Heart of Darkness is the game that inspired that return trip through Eric Chahi's body of work for me last year, and that game is so special and amazing, and I have so many fond memories of it, but yeah. It controls.
Let's do a Chahi mini series.
I would do a Chahi series,
dog. He's got the kind of catalog that we could digest. I wanted to real quick jump in with some. We asked for game recommendations, stuff that's a little bit off the radar. And you all sent in a lot of stuff, too, that I wanted to highlight because I had not heard much about them, but they sound very cool. This was from Charlie. I want to put in my recommendation for a great indie game from 2020, The Procession to Calvary. Mm. It is a point-and-click adventure set inside real Renaissance art paintings where you play a battle-hungry woman looking for excuses to murder people. It takes about 2 hours to get through, and it's genuinely laugh-out-loud funny.
Wow, that sounds really cool.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds great. The other one, this is from Kevin, said there's an early access game called Griftlands on Steam.
Ooh, yeah.
With how much y'all talked up Monster Train and Slay the Spire, I'm surprised I haven't heard anything from you on this one yet. It takes the best parts of those games and somehow puts it in the framework of a narrative that lasts for an hour, can be partially different every time. Highly recommend.
This is one of them clay games. I feel like it's been in the works for a bit, but like it's a deck building game where you have like, you know, deck building style combat, but there's also card based like dialogues. Like the game is broken down between those two. I've not played it. I've just been kind of like watching it from afar because I think it's still in early access, but it is it sounds very, very, very cool. I have heard lots of buzz about it, and honestly I'm overdue to check it out.
I got one more question for you. This is from Ash, the gay ass punk girl. Ash asks, what's your favorite game so far of 2020 and why? I think that's a great question for us because we're about at that midpoint. And I'm curious where all your heads are at, because in only a few months, the bloodbath begins, in which only one of us takes a victory for choosing the best game of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're closing in.
I cannot, as much as I want this to be competitive, I cannot think of anything that comes close to Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
There are games that are close-ish, but I agree with Griffin. I think Animal Crossing, without a doubt, is my game.
I don't even play that much, and like a lot of the people, my wife Rachel has more or less dropped off. We were talking about that because it's the first game she's ever gotten into to this depth, and it's like, hey, I don't like it anymore. And it's like, yeah, that happened. That happens.
Look at your playtime and you could appreciate.
Yeah, I know. No, I'm not saying it is a failure because of that. But like, I feel like that has opened the door for other games to come in. And like, honestly, can I be honest? I think Carrion is up there for me. Carrion's probably I fucking loved Carrion. Yeah. But
will you all please someone? I know you wouldn't play The Under Presents because you don't like me as a person.
No, we're kind of flying.
Would you please put some time into Monster Train?
Yes.
It is my favorite game of the year so far in 2020. It makes Animal Crossing look like dog shit because it didn't have any monsters in it at all, pretty much. And all
there's a ghost.
Zero trains. It's all planes. No monster plane? I think not.
I played the beta of what will probably be my game of the year this week. And it's called Fall Guys, and it is just the most delicious video game, and it is exactly what I needed right now, just pure joy. And it is a last person standing game. I believe it's 60 people in a match. It's a series of rounds, kind of like a game show. You play as effectively like little clay models. Like, what was that game where you Gang Beasts. Yeah. And you, most of the stages are like, hey, race to the end of this while dodging all these obstacles, Wipeout style. Y'all, it is so fun and so funny. And I don't know how they will balance it because there are already some things that people can do to really break it. Namely, there are people who wait at the finish line like bodyguards and will try to hold you from crossing the finish line, which at first I found very annoying. And then I found to actually be kind of wonderful in the same way that American Gladiators is wonderful. Yeah. That you have these expert players who are like, oh, the last test. I got to get past Blazing Rocket. And oh my gosh, it's colorful and vibrant and happy, and nobody can talk to you while you play it. They can just emote at you. It's the best, and I can't wait for all of us to have an episode about it.
Yeah, that'll be a fun. It's out soon, right? The 4th?
Yeah, it's out very, very soon.
Can we flip it just a little bit? What's left in 2020 that you guys are looking forward to? I think Cyberpunk is probably like the biggest big game that's supposed to come out this year.
Yeah, Cyberpunk. I think that Nintendo's like whole fall catalog is a total mystery right now, which
I'll tell you, I'm really looking forward to Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. I loved that game on GameCube, and I think they're doing actually something kind of cool with it. It's got online multiplayer that you can play across the Switch, 3DS, and iOS. Is that right? Yes.
Yeah.
What?
It's on. Oh no. I'm sorry. It's PS4, Nintendo Switch, and iOS, and it's all cross play, wow, which is like kind of wild. But I'm looking forward to that. I mean, it's a 15-year-old game that they're remastering, so I don't know if it counts. But
I mean,
there's a lot.
You got Rogue Legacy 2, yeah, which is probably going to be goaty material.
Also, yeah. Assassin's Creed Valhalla, soon. Destiny 2 Beyond Light, Watch Dogs Legion,
Marvel Avengers.
Hopefully, I want that to be good.
You want to hear a prediction that'll get bumped?
Yo, no. I will bet everything on it not getting bumped.
Oh, yeah, good. It's going to happen. That one? That one's
Star
coming.
Wars Squadrons, which I've heard really, really good things about. And then, for me, WWE 2K Battlegrounds.
Oh, that does look spiritual, very funny.
No, the spiritual sequel to WWE All-Stars, one of the best wrestling games of all time. I am.
Yeah, that looks
so
truly, high. Truly horrific.
Maybe also the best game title of 2020, Kingdoms of Amalur Re-Reckoning. coming out September 7th.
It's really confusing when I get that in my emails. I'm like, what? Is this responding to my reckoning email?
Yes. Halo.
Halo Infinite. That little game.
Just those little consoles. Okay. Let's be done. This has been such a great show. I'm so excited about video games. There's so many more great games to come. So many great games have already passed. Next week, we'll be talking about the best mechanic.
Best ideas.
In the
good ideas.
Best ideas in bad games. Good ideas.
We are
games.
So prepared.
Yes.
We're ready for it. Didn't just come up with it for a few minutes before.
Justin, you won't be here for that conversation. Do you want to just drop one right now? But don't say Dark Void, because I want to go in on Dark Void.
Then I don't have one. Yes, Dark Sector. It had a glaive that you could throw through elements and attack enemies with them, and then glaive would come back to you. Fucking kicked ass.
Yeah. So this is. I feel like this is going to be a heavy user interaction episode, because there's infinite ideas that you could talk about. So your favorite game mechanics or ideas in what is otherwise not a good game.
Send those to mail at besties.fan. Besties.fan is where you can find our show, and you can follow and listen for free on Spotify. Please share that link around with folks.
Or you can send us ideas on Twitter at thebestiespod. Leave it there.
Thebestiespod. There's also a link there. Our pinned tweet is a link to sign up for our mailing list, so you can get all the real behind the scenes dirt. We really trash each other. That's going to do it for us for this week. So until next time, thank you for joining us, and be sure to join us next time for the besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!